If you don't yet, you will soon in your life sense an acute need for wisdom. Because if you haven't yet, at some point soon in your life, you're going to maybe take a job that you never should have taken, or hire somebody that you never should have hired, or date somebody that you never should have dated. Wait, that hasn't happened to you yet? It's happened to me. It's happened to many. Because life is filled with decisions that need wisdom. Arguably, for us, in our present day, more wisdom than any other culture before us. You see, in the ancient world, much of life's biggest decisions were actually made for you, right? Where you would live, who you would marry, what you would do for work. By and large, those decisions were made for you by your family, by your parents, by your culture. But not so for you and me. No, we live in a culture that has given us an incredible amount of freedom to choose. But in the wise words of Uncle Ben, with great power comes great responsibility, right? How do we make the right decisions when we come to the left and the right? How do we choose the thing that won't end up blowing up in our face? Well, today we're going to look at someone who was known for decision-making, this King Solomon, in this particular text where he faced a kind of a weird fork in the road. But through it, I think we'll be equipped to align ourselves with the wisdom that can help us make these big decisions in our life. And it's that fork in the road that we were presented with right at the outset of our text, right? The very first verse began, "Then two prostitutes came to the king." Now, don't let the conversation about prostitutes get you sidetracked. Don't let that deter you. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But what we see in this text is really a commentary on life. Because it is inevitable in your life and mine that we're going to come to forks in the road. We're going to come to places where a decision has to be made, and we're going to have to use our judgment to make the decision. Right? And what this text is also showing us is that when it comes to lots of these decisions we make, the rules, if you will, don't always apply. Right? There are some decisions in life where the rules do apply and things are black and white. Right? There's a clear yes and a clear no. Right? So like, should you cheat on your next math test? Peek over the shoulder of the student next to you. No, don't do that. Should you return a fist to the one who started the fight? No, don't do that. The proverb, don't get mad, get even, that's not a biblical proverb, all right? Don't do that. So some situations are clear. They're black and white. There's rules to help guide us. But there's lots of decisions where it's not as clear. They're not black and white. The decision space is gray. And that's the case for Solomon in this text. You see, normally when a judge is issuing out a judgment, there's some sort of standard he can go by, some sort of common law to help the ruling. So in the case of should a child go and be with its mother, the common law would be yes, as long as the mother is fit to mother, right? She's not broken or hindered in some significant way. So, for instance, if you have two mothers vying for the same child, and one mother comes from, you know, a middle socioeconomic class, has a good relational support and resources to care for the child, and the other mother comes from lower class and is violent and maybe volatile, you have a sense of direction, right? Of which mother to go with. It's an easier choice. But as our text said, both of these women are coming from the same circumstances. They're both of a lower class. They're prostitutes. They're marginalized people. They likely don't have much in the way of resources financially or relationally. So that's not going to help. Okay, well then, in a case, maybe you have corroborating evidence to go with one woman or the other. Verse 18 in our text said, wait, they were alone. And this is what happens in life, right? Inevitably, you're going to face a fork in the road. And both options on either side of this fork are going to be saying the same thing. Pick me. How are you going to know what to decide? How are you going to have this wisdom? Where are you going to get it? It may be helpful to see how wisdom works, right? Especially when we consider how biblical wisdom is understood. Because the reality is, you have wisdom already. It's just a matter of knowing what wisdom you have. Right? So in the Bible, the way that wisdom works, that Hebrew word chachmah, kind of a fun one to say, chachmah. Wisdom is seen not as like this abstract thing that you can possess or not possess, but rather a skill. Or you might think of it as training, right? The way a wisdom gets used in the Bible, it'll often talk about those in the arts had wisdom to perform their artistry, or wisdom to build the structures that they built. The book of Proverbs, which is one of the kind of classic pieces of biblical wisdom literature, begins by saying, a son came before his father to listen to his instruction. See, so what the Bible is telling us is that wisdom doesn't happen in a vacuum. Wisdom is always connected to an authority. You learn wisdom. You are giving yourself to your ultimate source of wisdom. There's another piece of ancient literature known as the Wisdom of Sirach. It came pre-New Testament, and in that piece of literature, the man who finds wisdom says, come to me, you who want wisdom, and lodge in my house of learning. Buy it for yourself without money, and bend your neck to the yoke. Be ready to accept discipline and see for yourselves the great rest and peace that I have found. He says, bend your neck to the yoke. And that's what the Bible says, right? Your wisdom, your ultimate source of wisdom, is whatever you bend your neck to. So what is it that you are really yoked to? What is it at the bottom of your decision-making flow chart that determines whether you're going to go to the right or to the left? I'll give you some examples. So, for instance, let's say your ultimate source of wisdom is experience. More than anything else in life, you're kind of operating by the idea of FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. How is that going to impact your decision? Well, you'll find yourself probably never sitting like on a park bench, silently sort of taking in the scenery. That's too bland. That's too boring. You'll want to continually fill yourself with things that are exciting and enthralling. You might find yourself staying up far too late most weeknights and waking up far too groggy for work the next day because you're trying to make up for all the time that you lost dealing with life's responsibilities. But in the end, what you'll find is that in that chase of sensationalism, it takes more and more to keep you from being bored. And I don't know if you've seen some people in our world, even the face they make while they're supposedly taking in this exciting content, they sort of look doled out. Another example would be popularity. If that's your ultimate source of wisdom, then what you're going to find yourself doing is chasing recognition, even when it goes against your better judgment. You'll make decisions that go against the grain of your conscience because you know that by doing those things, you'll catch an eye, maybe the right eye. You'll find yourself saying things that you never thought you would say, or doing things that you never thought you would do. And ironically, what you'll end up doing is receiving recognition, but that's thin and hollow. The recognition that you're chasing may have been there with your true friends, those who are closer to you. But if popularity is your ultimate source of wisdom, you'll end up leaving those relationships to please others, but never quite holding on to it. You're always needing to impress. It's a thin recognition. I'll give you one last example. The example of parenthood. Now, when I say parenthood, I don't mean seeking to raise up your children in the way that is best for them. What I'm talking about is if you live your life, and maybe you've even heard people say this, that I live for my children, that they are the ultimate reason for why I get up in the morning. Because here's the problem: if your children are the ultimate source of your wisdom, you're going to try and do everything that brings them the most happiness, or everything you think is going to make them flourish the most. And so you might end up putting them in all sorts of activities and experiences so they have an abundant life. And you may end up pushing them into things that they never would have chosen for themselves, or never wouldn't even really fit them well, because you want it for them. And unfortunately, if a kid is smothered too much by the time they gain their own independence and leave home, there may be more space between you and them than you were after, the whole reason you were after it. You see, all these things undermine themselves ultimately, and that's sort of the brilliance of Solomon in this text. That's what he exposes when he brings out the sword. He shows that for one woman, motherhood is her idol. It's the thing she wants more than anything, even more than the child itself. She's so unhappy at the thought that her rival would have motherhood and that she wouldn't, that she is willing to give up the child. You see, because if motherhood is your idol, if that's the most important thing in your life, you don't actually care about your children. At the bottom of it, you care about yourself. If your career and success is the most important thing to you in your life, you don't actually care about the work that you're doing. You only care about how it reflects upon you. And so as a result, that mother says, "Let the child die, and neither of us will have him." And you don't really need the wisdom of King Solomon to recognize at that point in the story that she's not the real mother, right? Like, that's pretty obvious, but that's not the point. The point is Solomon's comment draws out of the woman, both women really, their ultimate source of wisdom. By Solomon's question, he shows us what the yoke of the woman was. Because the structure of wisdom is whatever you give yourself to, that's where your wisdom will arise. And in the end, you'll actually lose the very thing that you were after, unless you worship the real king. Unless you worship the one who ordered our life. Because as we worship him, we find ourselves in line with the real warp and woof of reality. The Bible teaches that if anything except Jesus Christ is the true king of your life, then the wisdom of your life is actually foolishness. But that's not what you're going to encounter when you walk out the doors of this place, right? The world is going to tell you exactly the opposite. It's going to say, you need these things. It's going to tell you if you don't have these things, your life is somehow less significant, less valuable, less worthy. You're missing out. The world is going to tell you to go chase all of these things and don't stop until you have them. And it's embodied by that woman in the story, the wisdom of this world. But has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? This is the backwards principle we see in this story, is that the wisdom of God and the wisdom of the gospel is that the way up is down. The first woman, she reveals the essence of wisdom, the secret of salvation, the meaning of everything. The second woman, she reached for something and she lost it. But the first woman, she demonstrated godly wisdom because she gave something away and she gained it. See, true wisdom is that the way up is down. The way to find your life is to lose it. You want real power? Go serve. Humble yourself. Submit yourself. You want real freedom? Love your neighbor. Give up things for them. You want to be rich? Give away your wealth. See, the first woman in the story, she gave that motherhood away and she got it back. In its purity, it was safe with her, and she was going to conduct that motherhood well. Can you imagine if the other mother would have received the child? That would have been horrible. The way she demonstrated her value system for the child. And you see, this reveals the structure, really, of our experience with wisdom in the world. Because in every problem that you and I face, there's a sword. There's a sword hanging over something, and the question is, which woman will we be? Sometimes in life, there's going to be a sword hanging over something very dear to us, so that we might even be tempted to say, God, how could you do this? How could you take this thing from me? And we'll be tempted in those moments to think that way, to think, oh God, if you really loved me, you wouldn't act this way. But look at how the first woman responds. Right? When he comes out with a sword, she doesn't say, no, Solomon, you can't do this. She says, please, my Lord, let her have the child. She's poised. There's no bitterness in her soul. She's willing to make that sacrifice. Some of you in this room would like to be married. And until you get married, there's a sword hanging over it, right? That's the reality. And the problem really only comes if you are insistent upon it. If it's just the thing you have to have. You see, the reality is, if that's the way you approach it, you're going to end up probably latching yourself with someone who you would have been wiser not to marry, not to connect with. It. If that's your ultimate thing that you need, if you're insistent upon it, you're going to end up killing the person that you marry. Not literally, I hope. You'll kill and yourself. You'll lose the very thing you're after. Because that's not your ultimate source of wisdom. You have to give up your insistence upon it. Give up your insistence upon a happy family. Give up your insistence upon a happy career. Do what the first woman is doing. Do what Solomon is doing. Do you stop to consider that? Look at Solomon. He's the king of Israel. Why is he meeting with two prostitutes? I mean, is anyone screening his calls? This doesn't make sense. We would expect a king, you know, to be walking around with sort of a pride and a, you know, this awareness of who he is and who he can govern and who can really have access to him, but not Solomon. He leads with a servant heart, with humility. He takes a look at two nobodies and he treats them as if they're somebody. By the end of the text, it says all of Israel is in awe of him, but that's not what's important to him. See, if you try and chase honor, you'll never get it. You try and grab parenthood, you lose it. But if you give it up, whatever you get back will be safe. It is yours from God's. God gives it. And maybe today you're looking at this woman and her courage to give up her child, and you're saying, yeah, Pastor Kevin, I see what you're talking about. And maybe they were courageous enough, but I'm just not. Maybe you're even able to identify what that thing is in your life that you want more than anything, and you just don't know how you're ever supposed to give that up. But you need to know something. You have a resource that this woman never had. You know something that she doesn't know, that she didn't know, that can melt your heart into an even greater poise than her, a greater sacrifice than even the one she made. Because you know who the true king is and who the true servant is. The one who said, not like the wisdom of Sirach, come to wisdom's yoke, but who said, come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. I am the true king. I am wisdom itself. And if you make Jesus the true king of your heart, you will have true poise. Because he's the only king that can't be taken from you. You see that every other thing in life you're always chasing, it's always not quite in your grasp. Or if it is in your grasp, you're nervous in the service. Will I keep up the look? But no power of hell, no scheme of man can ever pluck you from his hand. It's amazing to see what this woman did. You see what she did? She looked at King Solomon's throne and she said, no, don't ruin his life. Ruin mine. Don't tear this child in two. Tear me into two so that he can have hope and joy in his life. I'll give up mine. But don't you see, there was someone greater than her who looked up at God's eternal throne. And he looked at us and he saw that sword of judgment hanging over your head and mine. And he said, no, don't take their life, take mine. Don't tear them into, tear me into. Take all of my joy and all of my hope so that they can have joy and hope. He went so much further down than that woman. And so he was exalted that much higher. He went so much further down so that he could give us more than anyone else ever can. Do you see him doing that for you? Have you understood what he gave up for you? Has that begun to melt your heart? He's the only king who can forgive you, the only king you can't lose. And if you have him as your true king, you will be utterly wise. In Jesus' name, amen.